Good evening.
Good evening.
Amy, are you the only one on?
Yes.
Okay. I don't think we're going to be having a class because I don't think there'll be anybody else coming on.
I think the debates may be still on. I'm not sure.
They are for another hour.
Oh, okay.
So I don't think anybody's going to come on in the next 7-8 minutes, but let's wait and see.
Okay. And, you know, I have to go back and read the email. I know I missed the 7:30 class, and I wanted to listen to it. I go on the UShem website, and it will tell me how to get to that class.
It's yashem.com.
Right.
/... The word is recordings, RECORDINGS .htm.
Okay, thank you.
It,
okay, I'll wait.
It's not yet on there, it'll be there in the morning.
Okay, good. I'll do it tomorrow.
Amy, I just read your email, so I'll go ahead and do what you're requesting.
Oh, thank you, Hano. Thank you.
I'm a little confused about it because I'm reading it quickly, but I'm sure once I step back from it, if I have any questions, I'll send it in an email to you.
Okay, thank you. I think somebody just came on.
It's Ruby. I just joined.
Oh, okay.
Welcome.
I'll let him.
Okay, I'm going to mute my phone.
Okay, to both of you, I'm not going to do the normal beginning for this class because there's a lot of material to cover tonight. I will say the Ana B'Koach quickly in the way I do it. Which is not recommended. Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Taf Tzadi, Ufrei Shayin Sin Tet Nun, Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin, Bet Tet Resh Tzadi Taf Gimel, Tet Kuf Bet Tet Nun Ayim, Yud Gimel Lamet Pei Zayim Kuf, the letters of the month of Elul, Resh and Yud, Shin Kuf Av Tzadi Yud Taf. And the last verse we say in a whisper. So tonight's class is continuing where we left off yesterday. With getting into deeper levels of the shofar. And where that is located is on the revealed wisdom matrix, row 9, the second column from the left, the advanced teshuvah classes. And when you open up that page, the class we're on is class 4A. And then you need to scroll down to where it says the shofar and Rosh Hashanah. That's where I'm going to start reading. The shofar is connected to Bina, since it is similar to our trachea, which is another name for the windpipe. The windpipe, unlike the esophagus, receives no physical items like food and drink. When we hear the shofar, either in Elul or on Rosh Hashanah or on Yom Kippur, and we know this following truth, we cleanse our blockages within our bodies, and also the blockages created during this past year by the various nations. This is what leads to a completely cleanse following 12 months for both the individual, the congregation, the various nations, and the world in general. That's how important the shofar blowing is. In Hebrew, follow this truth. The Hebrew word for Satan is spelled Shin Tet Nun Sofit. The Nun Sofit is a straight line. It goes a little longer than the other letters. It goes below the line is the way it's described. The esophagus is the word Veshet, which is Vav Shin Tet. The Vav is a straight line, but it doesn't go below the line. When we allow our ego to express itself through anger and other negative emotions and thoughts, we expand both the ego and the Vav of the esophagus. As that Vav grows, it becomes a Nun Sofit. As we have learned about permutating words, all of the different energies of the different words are included within each other. Starting the day after Rosh Hashanah, each negative thought and action expands the Vav of the Veshet, the esophagus, to become Satan, and thereby block our access to the light. The larger the Nun, the less light flow to us, while the negative system, ruled by the Satan, receives more of that light. Please look at the Hebrew letters in the above paragraph closely. The only difference between Veshet and Satan is the location of the Nun Sofi, or is it a Vav? By blowing the shofar, we shrink the Nun Sofi back into its original Vav and remove the Satan from blocking our access to the flow of the light. This is why we blow the shofar. Yet this only works when we know with certainty that this metaphor is actually the way of the world. And there is one more prerequisite. We must sincerely want to change ourselves, to never do that next action or any negative action again. What is the action? The action that expands the egos and the Vav into a Nun Sofit. The link that is on this handout takes us to an essay explaining this in much more detail that's very important to learn. Now you can scroll down further, because we've read from this area that we're reading through, that we're scrolling through. We get to a paragraph. It's not marked anywhere. It's about 45% of the way down the page. It starts, from this point forward is a deeper explanation of the shofar and other aspects of the Rosh Hashanah holiday. And it was written by one of my teachers. I do not think we will have time to finish the teaching because it's very extensive. I warn people that this explanation will sound out there, a little mashugana, yet it is a real explanation of the natural laws of our universe that has not yet been revealed by science. Take it for what you will. The theory believes that prior to the Big Bang, our entire universe was an empty dimensional plane. It was only when a nearby parallel universe collided with our empty dimensional plane at a specific point that energy from the full one spewed out into the empty other, and later that energy congealed to form physical matter. From this point of singular primordial energy came the diversity of the universe. Ultimately, therefore, everything in the universe came from the same source and is therefore somehow still connected to it. Indeed, M-theory, membrane theory, which is what this current theory is called, states that everything in the universe is still somehow connected, and therefore any one thing can somehow affect any other thing. If you will allow my use of metaphor, creation was almost as if the other dimension penetrated our dimension, ejaculated into it, and impregnated it, our growing universe, and us, being the children. I use this metaphor because the guardians of Torah, the guardians of the Torah's secrets, speak in sexual metaphorical terms to describe the relationship between dimensions of Zeranpin and the Nukva. There might be more to this set of terms than mere metaphor. This interaction of primordial cosmic radiation fields affects everything, including human consciousness. King Solomon wrote that there is a time and a place for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to sow. These nice words are much more than beautiful poetry. Solomon, who was a keeper of the secrets, was actually discussing natural laws and how cosmic energy fields bombard Earth in a relatively mechanical, timely manner, influencing shifts in collective human consciousness, and thereby influencing and shifting the course of events on Earth, be they political, social, or economic. This cosmic interaction between Earth, radiation fields, and their influence upon human consciousness is by no means generic. The interactions never affect two people or two places in the exact same way. As each point in space is finite and subjective, so too is each monad of human consciousness. Each unit of consciousness is what we call a soul. As each of us go through our daily lives, oblivious to anything happening in the universe, we regularly pass through specific fields of cosmic energy, bombarding our planet. Some are large and can affect all humanity. Some can affect only a relative physical locality. Some vibrate at a specific resonance that affect only individuals of a certain orientation of consciousness. Everything is subjective and relative, yet everything operates according to the natural laws of the universe in its own version of mechanical form. Authentic Hebrew astrology is the science of understanding how natural cosmic fields present in the universe, or present in the universe, affect life on Earth, as Earth passes through them and is influenced by them. These influences are scientific and not mythical. The nature of these energy fields are some form of electromagnetism that may or may not be detectable by means known to present science. The nature of the influence that energetic fields have on human consciousness can be displayed in the laboratory. What is even more radical than this is the influence that human consciousness can have on energy fields. It is a well-known principle of quantum physics that atomic particles react in a different manner when they are being watched as to when they are not being watched. The nature of the observation affects them. Our universe, our planet, and our race all operate in this quantum reality. So too does our Torah. Torah is not a mere book about religion and stories or of legend. It is an extraterrestrial communique of a quantum nature and contains within it significant scientific lessons. If we ever bother to explore Torah scientifically and mathematically, we would make discoveries so profound that they would enable us to find our collective way back home to the stars from which we came. My commentary. There is a reason that the name of the race of angels mentioned in the Sefer Yetzirah are called watchers, or maybe they should be called observers and action takers. Torah directs its recipients to perform specific ritual acts in very precise, specific ways, in very precise, specific moments. The details can be as complicated and precise as operating a technical piece of machinery or operating software on a computer. If the lessons of the Torah were merely symbolic and mythical in nature, then all the details would be superfluous and unnecessary. Yet the fact that such details exist with such precision indicates to us that there is a reason for their being. A scientific exploration of Torah rituals reveals to us how human consciousness influences and affects not only human behavior, but also the electromagnetic fields or brain waves that they generate. The significant ritual associated with Rosh Hashanah is the blowing of the shofar, the ram's horn. Very precise details are given how a shofar is to be made, how it is to be blown, and even how it is to be held in one's hand. Again, if this were all a metaphor, the details would be superfluous. However, the ritual or blowing the shofar, when performed properly, combining all the necessary elements, creates a manipulation of subtle cosmic energy fields that have a profound effect upon human consciousness. Thus, we have the synthesis of time, space, action, and consciousness, each interacting with and influencing one another. The blowing on the shofar on Rosh Hashanah is in actuality an implementation of a natural scientific program facilitating the smooth flow of energy fields functioning within the universal machine. As an extraterrestrial communique, would we expect anything in the Torah to be any less profound? Human consciousness is the vital key that can influence all the other energy fields in the universe. The untapped powers of consciousness are today called extrasensory perception. We all have these abilities. They are part of our being human. They operate and function autonomously, whether or not we are aware of them. This is why we can always be influenced by forces from afar, afar in time and afar in place. This is also why when we train our minds properly, we in turn can influence forces from afar, afar in time, and afar in space. In order to assist us to accomplish this, we perform rituals, mitzvot. These have deep archetypal meanings in the unconscious and therefore affect us deeply when we interact with them by our performance of them. Torah mitzvot are expressions of scientific universal principles. When we perform them properly, we are creating influences and subtle shifts of cosmic energy that have a great effect upon ourselves and our surroundings. Knowing the meaning of the time of Rosh Hashanah is one thing. Knowing what to do at that time is another. This would have been impossible for humanity to discover had it not been for the reception of the Torah. As the alignment between Earth and Libra occurs, the doorway that brought us to Earth reopens as it was in the beginning. When Adam came to Earth and stood at that metaphorical place on his descent, he was still fully connected to his source, receiving 100% of the energy that his source provided. Now, at the time, every year, we, Adam's descendants, return to that same place that Adam stood. Yet what exactly is our individual relationship to the original place of Adam? Are we fully there or only partially there? Are we in direct alignment with the flow of natural cosmic energy emanating from our source, or are we somewhat out of sync with it? Where we stand on Rosh Hashanah defines for us how much a reconnection we each individually make. This is what defines what we religiously call blessings and curses. Mind you, where we stand is in not a statement of physicality. Rather, it means where our minds and souls are at in relationship to our inner human potential and source. Above usually is a metaphor for another non-physical realm or dimension, where the power of mind rules supreme outside of the influence of finite matter. However, even such a place must have its correlate counterpart here in physical space. Above, therefore, is a parallel dimensional plane, possibly the one spoken of previously in relationship to the M theory, which according to the secrets of Torah we call Eden. Yet this dimensional plane has its entrances here in physical space, most likely in appropriately protected areas right here on Earth. As the Torah states, there is a revolving sword of fire guarding the way to Eden. Our relationship with the cosmic energy field that flows from that other dimensional plane to ours defines for us almost everything in life, including our times of death. Indeed, the influx from that other dimension that began our dimension is the secret of life. The original influx ejaculated into our dimension. Then and now, this is the energy that Torah calls nefesh, and the Chinese called qi or ki. This is pure and raw life force energy, the fundamental power of creation and form. This is the indwelling presence of God imbuing everything in the universe, and in Torah tradition, it is called the Shekhinah. This is why Rosh Hashanah is Judgment Day. On this day, as we travel through space and time, we return to our place of origin. The original window of nefesh cosmic energy is there, flowing down in its original abundance. How we stand at that moment in relationship to it defines for us how much of a portion we will be able to maintain for the year until I return to that place. There is no greater judgment than this, yet it is only a metaphor to say that heaven or God is judging us. Rather, it is we ourselves that is judging ourselves. Our psychological spiritual state in relationship to our true inner higher self, our inner Adam, defines for us our portion and prescribes how we will be influenced over the coming year. Knowing well the full extent of our quantum universe, the Torah formed for us mitzvot that serve as archetypes that enable our true human essence to reconnect with our higher other dimensional source. This happens in a very precise and specified fashion, as do all other things in the laws and ways of nature. The Rosh Hashanah blowing of the shofar is a perfect example of this. We blow the shofar in order to arouse us to inner contemplation and how to repair a bad character and other immoral or illegal behavior. This is not done in some silly symbolic way. There is actually a science to the shofar, its sounds, and the mental contemplations projecting from the brain waves of the one doing the blowing. The shofar is not a musical instrument. It is an instrument of sound. Sound, like electromagnetic fields, have profound effects upon everything around them. Sound waves can kill, God forbid, and sound waves can heal, Bezrat Hashem. Sound waves can create, and sound waves can destroy. It is said that God created the universe, speaking it into being. What God spoke was a unique combination of sounds. Interestingly, modern science believes that the smallest particles of subatomic matter are called strings. Their vibrations form larger particles that eventually form atoms, molecules, and the rest of our universe of physical matter. Sound is thus the foundation of our universe. Everything comes forth from it. It is no wonder that the shofar expresses a sound that is primordial. The shofar creates a sound that speaks to the inner essence of our being. Its sound contains a wealth of information, unknowable and undecipherable to rational consciousness. My commentary. This even comes through to us through the veils of YouTube's videos. Of course, if you ever have the ability to attend a true Kabbalistic Rosh Hashanah event, you will understand and experience the difference in how your soul resonates with a shofar blast that has the correct blower's consciousness. Torah dictates that the shofar is to be made from the horn of a kosher animal. The details of making a shofar are not important right now. What is important is what the shofar is used for. We blow the shofar during Rosh Hashanah prayers. It is supposed to arouse us to contemplate bettering our lives. While many religious and moral teachings are taught about Rosh Hashanah and the blowing of the shofar, it is only the guardians of Torah secrets who reveal to us exactly how the blowing of the shofar works to alter human consciousness, and by doing this, alter construct reality. In brief, the language of Kabbalah states that the sephirotic face of Bina, called Ima, the supernal mother, is the one who blows the shofar above. She is said to blow the shofar over the head of her son, the sephirotic face of Tiferet, called Zeranpin. In synagogues today, the shofar is always held with its opening facing up. However, the Kabbalah teaches that its opening is supposed to be facing down, corresponding to the supernal pattern. The guardians of Torah secrets were masters of metaphor. They concealed a tremendous amount of psychological and scientific information within the mystical codes. In order to appreciate the scientific nature of the shofar and how it influences fluctuations of the cosmic energy fields vibrating on this day, we have to strip the Kabbalistic metaphors of their myths and explain what really happens. The Sefirah Bina is the metaphor used to describe human consciousness. The mind is the mother of being. From the mind comes from the heart, the seat of emotions, passions, and motivations. The heart is the receptacle that connects the human essence on earth. Unfortunately, it is also the heart that gets caught up, confused, and misguided. When the heart is led astray, higher human consciousness gets disconnected from the point of consciousness active in the human body. Mentally disconnected from our higher mind, from our source, we end up becoming trapped on earth, exiled, and lost from our original source. This is the fall of man in Eden. It is a split of the higher mind from what was become the lower mind. This is a form of psychic, spiritual schizophrenia. We live in a finite physical reality here on earth, lost and oblivious to our origins and true higher essence. In order to help us repair this breach in consciousness and to direct us home, Torah came to earth. Torah speaks to our hearts and tells us what to do to reconnect our hearts, our minds, and our souls. The Torah speaks the language of the soul, the higher self, which now resides within the unconscious part of our minds. Mitzvot reverberates universal truths of natural law. They are not metaphors. They are actual scientific formulas for the transformation of consciousness that enables us to evolve from being present-day Homo sapien man to a future Homo superius man. The heart is metaphorically called Tiferet, Zeranpin, the small face of God. This is because it reflects the supernal image above. Lower man was formed in the image of supernal man. Higher human consciousness, referred to as Bina, the supernal mother, looks after her children. Higher human consciousness looks down upon the heart, educates it, provides for its clarity, and nurtures it with reminders of its true being. Unfortunately, standard human living often creates interference, and the inner voice of the mother is often blurred. This is the definition of exile. Exile is not a political or a national condition. It's a condition of the psyche, of the mind. The shofar is the channel that reconnects Bina, the mind, with Tiferet, the heart. Not only do we symbolize this by holding the opening of the shofar down towards the heart, there is an entire set of meditative contemplations performed as the sounds of the blasts move through the shofar horn. My commentary. be the above discussion of the esophagus connection to the shofar and the satan, and then understand these are the same things from different perspectives and language and vocabulary. Continuing to read. We all pass through cosmic radiation fields at any given moment, and as they bombard our planet, the power of directed human consciousness can have profound effects upon these fields. Sound waves can be directed by human consciousness through the medium of voice. The tonnage of voice can be elevated and strengthened when projected through the shofar. Therefore, the blowing of the shofar, when performed correctly, along with the appropriate focus of mind, can create a profound effect upon those who encounter the sound waves. It projects, in other less scientific terms, those who hear its blasts. The specific focus the mind takes during the blowing of the shofar is called by the Kabbalists Kavanot, meditations, intention. They are a very intricate and detailed set of instructions for the movement of nefesh energy, shefa in Hebrew, from its domain above in the highest realms, in the inner recesses of the unconscious mind, to ultimately manifest here on earth, specifically within the human heart, which is the head of Zeranpin. It is not enough that one have a general conception of this. The duty is in the details. Compare this, if you will, to operating a computer. You can know how to turn on and off a computer and even know how to move its mouse. Maybe even how to open a program. But can you write a program? Do you know how to write the programs for Windows? Most likely not. Your knowledge of computers is limited. There's only so much you can do with what you know. Well, granted, you can do some things, but what you cannot do far outweighs what you can. This same example applies to the Kavanot meditations. First, one must have the training to discipline the mind in order to be able to attain a state of focused mentality. Only when the mind can remain focused without distraction for significant periods of time will it be able to attach itself to pure, unadulterated, non-mythical thought and use it to manipulate the energy fields surrounding and penetrating human consciousness. Indeed, a very good Kabbalistic meditator, like the biblical prophets, could use their powers of mind even further to actually manipulate physical matter. This is how the priests use the combined power of their shofar blasts to topple the walls of Jericho. This is how Eliyahu Hanavi was able to, in essence, create the rain that he was praying for. This is how numerous sages throughout Torah history used their mind powers to create material forms. The stories of golems and animals being created out of the technology taught in the Sefer Yetzirah are far from mythical. There are those who to this day have sufficient education and training to manipulate these forces. On Rosh Hashanah, when the time is right, trained human minds make use of specific rituals, and by doing so create profound psychic effects in collective human consciousness. The blowing of the shofar by those who know what they are doing according to the secrets of things is at a subtle level of consciousness heard by everyone around the world. The numerous others blowing their shofars on Rosh Hashanah without the proper mental focus are acting as local amplifiers, or the voice emanating from the mouth and the mind, from Bina, from the mother of the properly trained. In conclusion, my purpose in writing this essay was to demonstrate a little of what in Torah circles we call Ta'amei Mitzvot, the meanings behind the commandments, or the Ta'amei means, translates as the taste of the mitzvot. We have for so long made a myth of Torah and religion to the point that many have fallen away from it, dismissing it as nothing more than outdated fairy tales. This is partially the fault of those Torah teachers who themselves do not know the true depths of Torah. How can the student be expected to embrace that which even the teacher does not know? I believe in light of the moment, it is wise to reveal the underlying scientific realities of Torah in order to dispel myth. I believe it is prudent for us to understand the significance of the movements of stars and planets, cosmic electromagnetic radiation fields, and their effects upon our planet and its life forms. We need to know how Torah teaches us the science of sound, of prayer, and the power of the human mind, the Kavanah, that can tap into and manipulate cosmic fields, and how the performance of mitzvot can actually create and generate a difference in our little unaware lives here on Earth. We truly do live in such a grander universe than we can imagine. Through our contemplations, we can tap deep inner recesses of our minds, of which we are seldom aware. I pray that I have given you something to contemplate, to think about, or possibly even dream about. When the shofar blows on Rosh Hashanah, clear your mind of distraction and listen intently to your heart. You may very well hear the voice of Bina, the mother, speaking within you. What she will be saying, only you will ever know. Today's class is being given on September 26th in the year 2016. Next week, we will start the explanations of the holidays and the process of Dormita and Nesia and much, much more. Then there will be one more class prior to Rosh Hashanah. We will see how much preparation we will receive and how much more we can learn. Have a wonderful new year.
Thank you, Hana.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hana.
You're welcome.
Hana.
Yes, Jasmine.
Hello. I have a question.
Go ahead.
This is amazing, this teaching, and especially, you know, in Rosh Hashanah, go to a place where the shofar blowers know what they're doing. And how can we do that? How can we make sure that the person that is doing the blowing the shofar is really having the Kavanah?
Go to a Kabbalistic Rosh Hashanah, go to a minion of Kabbalists.
Okay, and I have the Kabbalah Center nearby me. Is that a good place to go?
The Kabbalah Center brings all of their communities into one place. There's only maybe three people who know how to blow the shofar in the Kabbalah Center. And there's
wow.
maybe 20 or 30 Kabbalah centers.
Yeah.
So if you're not in that central meeting, have the consciousness to be in one soul with those people who do know how to blow the shofar.
Mm. Okay. I'm a little lost, but I'll try to understand.
Take your time to reread this handout.
Hello.
Yes, Amy?
I was going to say the same thing, that was so amazing, because for all the years I've gone to synagogue on Rosh Hashanah, and I really, I mean, I guess I didn't know what it was all about, but I do know that the rabbi that blew the shofar, it was always pointing up, never down. So it's just amazing how, like what you said, how can we learn if the teacher doesn't know themselves? So that was very amazing. That was very interesting class. And thank you.
You're very welcome. Tomorrow at 8 o'clock West Coast time, we'll have a Slichot ritual service. At 4:30, we'll have a mini Zohar class. At 6 o'clock, the Tikkuni Zohar class. And at 7 o'clock, we'll be reading the next handout on that list, preparing for Rosh Hashanah. Speak to you all soon.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.